Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 92. We're now in the book of Luke, chapter 11, and verse 27. We're going to continue from this point. And it happened as he spoke these things, and that's in essence for what we discussed last time, of people who are illuminated with the truth and they reject it. You see, they are basically in the category of the many who are called. You see, but they're not chosen. Why? Because they reject it. Well, in that case, since they have been illuminated with the truth and they reject it, they're going to be in a much worse condition. Because at this point, they allow demons or influence of demons or poisonous spirits, you know, to influence them. That's how, in essence, you know, they reject the truth. And so I said their condition will be much worse than those who have never heard the truth. And it generally is that way. And so he said, as it happened, as he spoke these things, that a certain woman from the crowd raised her voice and said to him, "Blessed is the womb that bore you and the breasts which nursed you." So in her own thinking, she thought that, well, that's a good thing that a man speaks like that. And it's good that he had a woman. You see, that raised him in the law of God. You know, how much he knew about him being the Son of God or the Messiah, we don't know. What we know here is she's one of the followers that appreciated what he had to say, and therefore she was honoring his mother. And this is where she put the emphasis, you see. And, you know, it's a common language in the Jewish community, especially in old times, you know, not as much today, to use this kind of a language. Of course, you never hear a Protestant ever saying that. Verse 28, but he said, more than that, you know, that's okay too, you know, to honor father and mother. He didn't say forget all about that. He said, more than that, blessed are those who hear the word of God and keep it. You see, the word to hear means to listen and to obey, you see, and to keep it, to continue until the end. Because some people, you know, they hear and then they obey, and after a while, you know, they give up. And so in essence, in that he was saying that, you know, those who endure until the end shall be saved. So those are the ones who are really going to be blessed, you see. So people should concentrate more on that reality, you see. Not that you do away with the other, you know, you just disregard your parents, you don't. But he wanted to hear and wanted every single one of us to understand what is it that is more important in the mind of God, you see, that we give honor and grace, you know, and praise and things like that, you know, to Mary, you know, the Blessed Mary, as the whole religion does it. They spend so much time on that and writing books and writing songs and worship and all that for a woman that they think is alive in heaven. They call her the Queen of Heaven, you see, or obedience to the law of God, keeping the word of God until the end. You see, that's what's more important. A lot of people forget that. They're often turning to the idol worship. You see, and idol worship can be Mary or even Jesus Christ becomes an idol to them. Not a real God with the law that must be obeyed. You know, so they like to come and praise Jesus, honor Jesus, sing to Jesus, all the wonderful things that he's done for us. But they would not do what he say. That's why he says in another place, why do you call me Lord, Lord? Why are you honoring me so much, just like this woman is honoring Mary? You see? Why do you do that, and you do not do what I say? A lot of people have that attitude. And it's, you know, it's becoming a big thing nowadays again, you know, the Jesus religion. They worship, you see, the Son of God, which they should, you see? But as Christ would say here, more than that, you should obey him. Obey his law. He's the God that came down on Mount Sinai and gave that law. He's the God that created Adam and Eve with his own hands and came down and gave his law and teachings to Adam and Eve and to all those that followed and were righteous men. He's the God that descended and spoke to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You see? He's the God that said that I give all these promises and covenants and blessings to Abraham because he obeyed, you know, he heard. That is, he obeyed my voice, he heard, you know, he followed my charge, whatever I told him, he did. And he kept my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. You see? So more than that, you want to praise, you know, God? Wonderful. Praise Jesus Christ. Praise the Lord. You see, hallelujah, that's what hallelujah means, praise the Lord. But if you do not obey him and his voice, if you reject his law and you say, well, he did it for me, or that law is nailed to the cross, or it's done away with, then Christ would tell you all your worship of me was in vain. You see? So I have to go beyond that. That's what this woman, you know, needed to be reminded, and everybody else that was listening. Be it about Mary, be it about himself. You see? God is not interested in vain worship. God wants people who would worship him in truth and in spirit. And the only way you can worship him in truth, if you obey the truth and you walk in the truth, you seek it to begin with and you hunger and thirst for it, and then when it is there before you, you walk in it, you keep it, you hear it. And so verse 29 we read, and while the crowds were thickly gathered together, you know, it was always a big crowd, big multitude, he began to say, this is an evil generation. It seeks a sign. And again, he's not speaking about all the multitude, you know, all the thick crowd here. He's talking about the few among them that no matter what he did, they still rejected his divinity, rejected his teachings, you see. And, you know, he didn't come to bring new teachings to begin with. He came to amplify and to magnify what was already known, but they were not willing to acknowledge that. So when you read a statement like that, don't think that he's talking about the entirety of generation. You see, he was not talking about his disciples. He was not talking about the 70. He was not talking about the many that followed him. They didn't ask him for a sign. They just followed him. They believed. They already saw those things. So understand the context. He's talking about the people that always mocked him. You know, the ones that earlier they said, well, he's doing that by the power, you know, the devil. So he's talking about the minority in this sense. So when he says this generation, always understand what it means. When he says, you know, the world, always understands what it means. It does not mean the entirety of the world. It means, you know, the part of the world in which they lived. You see, just like some people say, well, the whole world is going crazy. Well, what do they mean by that? You know, the people around them that they see act in a crazy way. You see, a lot of people, you know, they don't pay attention to what they're reading. And therefore, they, you know, have confusion and division in their understanding because of that. So he says about those people who are of an evil disposition, this is an evil generation, it seeks a sign, and no sign will be given it to it except the sign of Jonah the prophet. You see, another place in Matthew, he mentioned as Jonah the prophet was in the belly of the womb 3 days and three nights, and mind you, you know, a lot of people forget that, he was alive. You see, so the sign that he gave is a sign of a man that was alive in the belly. And then there was a period of time where probably passed out. You see, there is an indication to that, and then he's sort of, you know, coming back, and he's praying to God. You see, some people think, you know, he must be dead 3 days and three nights. He didn't say that. He said, Jonah the prophet was 3 days and three nights, you see, in the belly of the womb. And then people begin to argue, you know, what does that mean? You see, full days, partial days, you know, and so forth. We're not going to spend too much time on that. Later on we'll have more to say at the end of the book, well, there is a mention there again about the timing of his resurrection and obviously the timing of his death. Verse 30, for as Jonah became a sign to the Ninevites, he wasn't a sign to the children of Israel, so also the Son of Man will be to this generation. The Queen of the South will rise up in the judgment with the men of this generation. What is he saying here? Again, if you believe in the doctrine, the pagan doctrine of heaven and hell, you know, they're already there in hell. What do they need to be raised? They're alive. They're in hell, you know. Alive and not well, but alive, you know. Burning. You see, that's a false doctrine. No, he says, you know, all these people that lived, you know, in that kingdom, you know, the Queen of the South and all others who were with her, you see, they're going to rise up with this generation, because that's when all of them are going to be raised up from the dead, the good and the bad, the righteous and the unrighteous, and appear before the judgment throne of Jesus Christ. You see, out of the grave. And so, yeah, this is what it says, and they shall rise in the judgment, that's when the resurrection occurs, you see, with the men of this generation, and condemn them. You see, why? Because, obviously, they didn't hear the truth, they didn't know it, and yet these people heard it and knew it, and they rejected it. And he's not talking about the ones that followed it. And as it is, many of those who followed him later on rejected it as time went by, because they didn't think, you know, that what they wanted happened. You know, Jesus Christ did not deliver them from Rome. So, you know, gradually they believed the lies of others. Well, you know, I guess he was not a true prophet after all, even though they've experienced signs and wonders and miracles. But still, later on, many of them came back to themselves, you see, and followed the apostles. And there were tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, within the land and other communities of Judah, you know, that were scattered abroad, that became followers of the apostles. And then you had all the children of Israel that the 12 disciples went to. And so he says, this generation is going to be condemned by the others. For she came, speaking by the king, queen of the south, from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and indeed a greater than Solomon is here. So she heard him, she believed, you see. She did not mock him and rejected him. And here it is, somebody who's greater than Solomon, and yet the very people who should know better, people of the book, they're rejecting it. And obviously he's talking about the ones that did, not the ones that didn't. Verse 32, the men of Nineveh will rise up in the judgment, and those were, you know, very cruel people, the people of the Assyrian Empire, very vicious and malicious in so many ways, militarily speaking, you see. And yet, he said, they're going to rise with this generation and condemn it, because, you know, all their evil deeds was because of their ignorance of the law of God. They didn't know God. He didn't reveal himself to them. Well, this generation saw him in person, heard him in person, and should have known better. We're raised on the law, all of them. You see, that's what he's talking about. For they repented at the preaching of Jonah. And here it is, you know, those are Gentiles. They know nothing about the law of God, and yet, you know, they were impressed when they saw the sign of Jonah, you see, and they believed. And obviously, they were very superstitious to begin with. Everything, you know, scared them. That was, out of this world, so to speak. In either case, they repented at the preaching of Jonah. They believed his words. And indeed, a greater than Jonah is here, and yet the people are not repenting. Speaking about the ones who did not. After all, remember, you know, the days of John, all of Judah, all of Jerusalem, you know, many of Jerusalem, and Galilee, way up, Tyre and Sidon, they all came and were baptized. So they were repenting, confessing their sins. So he's not talking about them. You see, a lot of people read this without context, without background, and they jump to conclusion and come up, you know, with their own ideas. Always understand the entirety of the story. What is he talking about? Against whom? You see, so when he says this generation, always understand. He's not talking about the overwhelming majority of them. Verse 34, he says, verse 33, he says, no one, when he has lit a lamp, put it in a secret place or under a basket, but on a lampstand, that those who come in may see the light. What's the connection, you know, between this one and Jonah and the queen of the south? You see, God gave the law to Israel. That should have been the light of the world. You see? Instead of that, because of their constant conflicts and backbiting and hating one another and animosity, they were the laughing stock of the world. You see? So you have to understand what he's talking about also. And also, that's a lesson for all the people who are going to follow him. You know, don't be like them. Be genuine followers of the law of God, you see. The mind of God, the nature of God that is reflected by his law, and the spirit that God is going to give to his people. Obviously, then he commands all of them to be the light of the world that Israel was supposed to and will yet in the future. Yeah, make the link between the two, otherwise you're going to miss an awful lot in the process. The lamp of the body is the eye, therefore when your eye is good, your whole body also is full of light. But when your eye is bad, your body also is full of darkness. And many who followed him, who repented, confessed their sins, and were baptized by John, and then many others were baptized by the disciples of Christ, you see, well, they were not in that category. But the others, that no matter what they saw, signs, wonders, and miracles by him, still had that malice in them, that darkness in them. They were the ones that were mocking him, trailing him all the time, and, you know, poking at him all the time. So again, understand what he's talking about. You see, when people forget all this context and background, they totally take it out of proportion, out of context, you see, and apply it to something totally different. Now, it's applicable to many things, obviously, but always understand the context under which he said it and what he meant by that. And so in verse 35, we read, therefore take heed that the light which is in you is not darkness. Otherwise, it's not light. If then your whole body is full of light, having no part dark, the whole body will be full of light, as when the bright shining of a lamp gives you light. So in essence, he's gently in that sense reminding all those people that were not where they should be in their heart and mind, that the light that he's giving them should not be rejected, or else their whole body is going to be filled with darkness. And for the others, the light that he gave them, they should use it to shine their environment, you see, to be a light to all those around them. After all, they were, you know, many of them lived in areas where there were Gentiles around also, beside Israelites, Jews, and as well, you know, for the light of the world. So the world would know exactly what God always wanted Israel to be known for. People of the book, people of the light, people of truth, people of righteousness, you see. So the application is here mainly for his nation, for his people, and for all those who are going to follow in their footsteps. Verse 37, as he spoke, a certain Pharisee asked him to dine with him, and obviously he was not of the same state of mind of the others that mocked him, but he was not necessarily a person that walked in the light. And so, in other case, he invited him, as many others did, and God always, you know, went to them. They are his people. These are members of his bride. Always remember that. You see? In other words, you're not seeing what you're reading here in the proper perspective, from the point of view of God himself and Jesus Christ. So he invited him, and he sat down to eat. You know, he didn't say, oh, well, you're a Pharisee, I don't want to eat with you. You see? He was a man that obeyed the law of God, you know, needed some help, some eyesight, you know, to have a better knowledge and understanding, and to be more genuine, you know, in his faith and belief. For that reason, Christ came, you know, to heal the sick, not those who were righteous in their own eyes. And so when the Pharisees saw it, so you see, you know, he invites him to dine with him, and so he went in and sat down to eat. Now, if you don't know the culture of Judah, if you don't know the context, you know, you're not going to get anything out of it. You would not understand. You just think, well, he invited him, went to eat, you know, and sat down. Well, that's natural. As you see, when you understand the culture, you realize immediately something is missing here. Because when you're invited to dinner in a Jewish home, to this very day, in an Orthodox home, we're talking about religious home, the first thing you do, you don't go and sit down at the table. Oh, the first thing you go, you know, you have your hands washed. You see, you came from the market, you came from here and there. You know, you come before God and you eat a meal, you're going to give thanks and blessings to God, you're going to, you know, touch the food, others that are touching it. Well, you want to have your hands cleaned. And this is what the Pharisee is noticing, and he's wondering, well, what's wrong with this guy? And so when the Pharisee saw it, he marveled that he had not first washed before dinner. You see, that's totally out of character to a person who believes in God and walks in the ways of God, you know, and follows a community and dictates and things like that. Of course, what he didn't take into account, the rabbis came up with this kind of rituals. It's not that you should come dirty to the table, you know, that should be understandable, but if your hands are clean to begin with, you don't need to do it. You see, unless, you know, you're messing around with your hands, you know, touching filth and dirt. But if you don't, that's not an issue. But the rabbis made it an issue. And then made it a religious ceremony, and then made it a ritual, and then obviously when he didn't do it, you were a sinner. You see? That's how human beings always function. You know, the Pharisee is found everywhere, in every given religion. It's not something you find only in the Jewish community. No, that's the nature of man, to go over and above and beyond, you know, which God did not ask, and then that becomes a religion, and then the law of God itself becomes of none effect. Well, all of us are guilty of that. When we do, these kind of things, you know, then we decide in our minds, well, this is righteous, this is not. And if you don't do the way things, you know, the way we do them, well, there is something wrong with you. That's very common. You see it everywhere. And so this is what, you know, he's marveling. And of course, Jesus Christ perceives that. Then the Lord said to him, now you Pharisees, you know, all of you, you know, who make a big deal out of these things that you came up with, you know, of your own mind, now that it is totally evil, wrong. See, just now, this is not what God asked you to do. He says, you Pharisees, you make the outside of the cup and dish clean. This is what you are concerned about, image. Everything is image. And to this very day, you know that people function like that. You know, the first appearance, I always tell you, you know, put on the right image. You go to get a job, that's what you do. You project an image. You want to run for politics, you have an image. You have people who are especially experts in that area and do that for you, build you an image. They don't build, you know, an image of the inside, but of the outside. Nobody knows what you really are made of, what you really believe. You see, then to find out after you've been elected, you do your own thing. That's what he was doing. Now that's what he's saying, you know. You know, these kind of people, you know, that you just care about the image, the outside. But your inward part is full of greed and wickedness. So there was a lesson to be learned there by the Pharisee. You see, and the rabbis forgot that. Instead of emphasizing the inside, they emphasize the outside. And in essence, what they've done, they reversed the role of the Torah. The role of the Torah is mainly to teach you the inside and the outside. But, you know, everything was pointing to the inside, the spiritual intent, the cleanness and purity of the heart. And they concentrated on the facade of it. And God gave both. You see, in this case, God didn't give them this ritual, you know, of washing. But, you know, in general, you see, God gave both, you know, the physical and the inside. Well, they made the inside, you see, the less important. That became to them the peel, you know, just the outside appearance. And that which is the outside became the main thing to them. And literally, they actually taught that the Torah, the entirety of the body of teachings that came from God, from Moses, was just the peel, just the outside, just the facade. In order to really know what the heart of it, you have to go inside. So they invented the inside. You see, God didn't give it to them. He didn't lead them by the Holy Spirit to that understanding. They now give themselves the freedom. And that's how Rabbinic Judaism came about and displaced and replaced Biblical Judaism. And most people are not aware of it. Most Jews are not aware of it. Most of those, you know, just look at the Jew and the Pharisee. They don't understand what really happened at that point. You see? When you study the teachings of that time, you realize that's exactly, you know, like there was a famous man, Rabbi Akiva, one of them, he's just one of them, there are many others have done that. But, you know, he was stressing that, and then they began to have their own schools of learning, and they began to teach that, you see, that the Torah is just the outside, just the peel, you know, just the facade. You see, you have to go deeper, you know, inside it. And yes, Christ came to magnify the law, to tell you what's the inside of it. Magnify it, not do away with it, not replace it. You see? Not say, well, that's just the outside, the facade, you know, don't care about it. That's not what he did. He came to show the richness of it. You see? And for people to obey it, not only in the facade of it. It's not only don't murder, don't even hate. You see? And so they were inventing their own magnification of the law, but not being led by the Spirit of God, they invented their own ideas. Well, people do it to this very day in every given church and congregation. We do it in our own minds and hearts when we lean to our own understanding. Don't just, you know, point the finger at the Pharisee when you are one of them, you see. Look at the mirror of the law. Many of us, you know, fail to do it, but, you know, it's very convenient to accuse others. You know, the Pharisees are the kind of people that do it. Well, all of us are guilty of it to one degree or the other, when we lean to our own understanding. And so he says, this is what you should care about, because your inward part is full of greed and wickedness. You foolish ones, did not he who made the outside make the inside also? And if you don't understand, comprehend, you know, fully what Christ is talking about, you'll say, now wait a minute, you know, just earlier you said, don't ever call a man a fool, because then you'll be in judgment. So, was he breaking a law here? You see? Again, a lot of people who are not capable of discerning the law of God and the Word of God, they get, you know, entangled with that and think, well, you know, the Bible has many contradictions. Or as Paul said, you fool, about those who did not understand the resurrection, 1 Corinthians 15, you see. So you have to understand what Christ says, and you have to understand more so what he means by that. So it's not across the board, don't ever call a man a fool. You know, if a person acts like a fool, he's a fool. You see, but what he's talking about that point, you know, as we discover, you know, that is covered it at that point, he's talking about the attitude, you know, of calling a fool who is not. If you are, you are. But if you are not, don't put down a person just calling him a fool because, you know, you don't agree with him or you don't like him. That's what he's talking about, the spirit of contempt. And people, again, don't understand it, as they should. Verse 41, but rather, he said, Oh, he said, you know, you foolish ones, did not he who made the outside make the inside also? You see, God made the facade, the outside appearance. God made the inside appearance. And you should care for both. Because some people, again, you know, go from one extreme to the other. But rather give alms of such things as you have, then indeed all things are clean to you. If your heart is clean, you see, and he's not talking only about the washing of the hands. Here he's talking about behavior, about conduct. Double-faced conduct, you see. That's the point. The point is not the washing of the hands. He knows that, you know, when you get dirty, you got to wash your hands. You see, you don't come dirty to a table. He gave all those laws that if they transgressed, you see, the death penalty would be hanging over their head. He gave all those laws to the priesthood, how clean they should have been, how many times they should wash, where they should wash, how they should change their clothes, you see. He is the one that gave all these things, but all those things had to do with the spiritual, to teach you that your mind and your heart should be clean and pure, and also your body. He didn't want people sweating coming in, you know, before him. So understand the totality of it, and that's what the law of God is all about. Understand the totality of it, the outside and the inside. But don't claim the outside, you know, is not important, or don't claim the inside is, you know, is not important, or invent your own. You have to have the totality of it, and that's what the law of God is all about. And some people, you know, because of their spirit and attitude, they go one way or the other. Always understand, men shall live by every word of the that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And if he told you, you know, gave you some commandments about the outside, don't disregard it. Don't have contempt for it. And if he told you about things about the inside, you know, which the outside, you know, leads you to the inside, you see, don't minimize it. You see? And this verse is apparently, you know, all human beings, you know, when they'll enter their own understanding, that's the way we end up. And so it says, but woe unto you Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and all manner of herbs, and pass by justice and the love of God. This you ought to have done, that is, all the little things outside, without leaving the others undone. You see? Totality of it. There is no such a thing, oh, picky points, that's not necessary for salvation. It's such a little thing Christ doesn't mind. Oh, no. If the high priest dared come before the Holy of Holies without washing his hands where he was supposed to, in the manner that he was supposed to, if he wore the wrong kind of garment, appearing before God in silk, you know, which he had before that, instead of cotton cloth, he would have been put to death. God told him, I'll kill you. So don't ever play games with the law of God and say, well, this is picky, you know, law, you know, Pharisaic, you know, you're just acting Pharisaic. You see, those people who have contempt for the law of God, never have contempt for the law of God, the small or the big. You don't come before God and say, oh, well, I don't care about that, you know, just, you know, I'll just do the main things. You see, you break one of them, as James say, you broke them all. If you have that attitude, you see, this is what you're going to end up, totally rejected. So don't ever allow anybody to poison your mind and heart and tell you, well, this is picky, this is little, you know, this is not necessary for salvation. As soon as you begin to walk in that direction, you end up exactly where Satan is. Iniquity entered into his mind, a little one first, and then it grew like leaven. That's what, you know, the example of the leaven is all about. So don't ever allow yourself to have that attitude or develop this attitude in your mind or heart. On the other hand, do not overemphasize the little things that God gave you at the expense of the major things. And so you think only justice, you know, you did something wrong, I'm going to come in, you know, execute justice against you. No mercy, no compassion, no forgiveness, no grace. You see? Well, that's what people are. He says, don't be that way, neither this way nor the other way. You know, we read it in Matthew 23:23. And he called them the weightier matters of the law. Justice, faith, you see, mercy. And there were many others. Grace, love, affection, kindness, compassion. In other words, just like the body, it's not made only of bones, but it's made of bones, you know, and flesh and hair and all kind of things there. Everything is important. So everything has its place. But it's true, you know, if you lose a finger, you know, you can still go on living. You know, you wouldn't miss much in one way, you see. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, that you go get rid of your fingers because, you know, it's not necessary for salvation, you know. That's what people do with the law of God. You see, that's foolishness. And that's what he's saying here, and that's the law of God. That's the law of Jesus Christ. This is, you know, what people would call, well, this is a Christian principle. No, this is the law of God, and it has been from the beginning of time. As Moses said, this is the law. Don't add, don't diminish. You see? And he received it from Jesus Christ. So in one, you know, on one hand, you'll be correct by saying, you know, this is a Christian principle or doctrine, whatever it may be. What you would not understand is, if you do not consider that Jesus Christ is the one that gave the law to Moses, and you think only about the New Testament, well, here it is, a new religion, that's where you go wrong. You see? That's what happened to men who call themselves Christians. They don't understand where it came from originally. That those, as God told Moses, you know, this is the pattern of things in heaven. This is where it proceeded from, the Father and Jesus Christ, given to Moses, given to Israel. You see? Understand it always. The entirety of the story, not just, you know, bits and pieces of it. And so he says to you, you know, woe to you, Pharisee, and every single one of us. You know, you care about the little things, the tie, you know, the tie, you know, which God commanded, all manner of herbs, but you pass by, you know, the weightier matters of the law, justice, the love of God. This you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. And of course, he's not quoting it exactly, you know, as Matthew did, you see. But nevertheless, the same thought. Verse 43, woe to you, Pharisees, for you love the best seats in the synagogues and greetings in the marketplaces. You see, in the word love there, and as I mentioned earlier, is a word that is used for agape, spiritual love. Well, how do you spiritual love a seat in the synagogue? Well, that's because, you know, phileo or agape by themselves would not tell you exactly what it is unless you add another word to it. You see? When it says spiritual love, then you understand. But if you just say love, you know, be it agape or phileo or, you know, whichever, you would not understand it. You know, even when you talk about erotic love, you see, there is spiritual erotic love. Because that was a marriage between God and Israel. There has to be an erotic love there, but it's a spiritual in nature. It's not physical. That's what God said about his wife, his bride, as a bridegroom rejoices over his bride. We're talking about an erotic love, sexual love, affectionate love, you know, everything that goes into it. So will your God rejoice over you. Well, what happens when the hearts and the minds are being defiled and polluted and contaminated by the mind of the devil, and people think, well, that's godly, and it's not. So marriages and sexuality become defiled. As Paul said, marriage, you know, is good, is holy, and the bed undefiled. Why is he saying that? Because of the poison that entered into the minds of the people that came from the Gentile mold, you know, they brought their filth and stench and pollution with them, and they had no proper understanding of what sex is all about, you see, and the relationship, you know, the spiritual relationship there between God and man, which is a marriage, a marital one, a sexual one, but spiritual in nature, obviously, not physical. And that's what he's saying here. And then he in verse 44, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like graves, which are not seen. So here you find, in essence, the place of that which we read in Matthew 23. Where did he make those statements? You see, that they sit, that, you know, in other words, that the Pharisees and the scribes that sit in the seat of Moses, whatever they tell you to do, you better do. Because what they tell you to do, if it is in accordance with the seat of Moses, that's the key. If they teach you Moses, they teach you Jesus Christ, they teach you God. But when they do other things, like, you know, the washing of rituals and, you know, things that they have invented, and then the emphasis they put on this, on that, that's a different story. A lot of people, you know, struggle with it to this very day, not understanding. And so there's, you know, some people come up with their own doctrine, their own idea, their own opinion. In their ignorance, they produce it. Well, they say, well, Christ didn't really mean, you know, whatever they tell you to do, you do. He just said, you know, some people say, well, it's an irony, you know, he was just making fun of them. You know, they put themselves in the seat of Moses. No, they did not. God inspired it because, of, you know, the Sadducees, the priests were not doing their job. And when they don't do their job, as John said, you know, to his people, look, if you don't do your job, God is able to raise, you know, sons out of stones. And that's exactly what happened. By default, the Pharisees were chosen by God to do the work, just like all the ministers of Jesus Christ later and down the road. You see, when others didn't do their job, God is raising others to do it. And so he raised the Pharisees to preserve the truth in his own people. But, like the nature of man, when they lean to their own understanding, they go by the wayside and they do their own thing. He didn't mean for them to do that. You see, if you don't understand it, you're not going to understand anything that you read properly. And many people make these kind of mistakes. They go from one extreme to the other, being themselves ignorant. And so he says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, for you are like graves, which are not seen." You see, outside it looks beautiful. You know, you go to a cemetery, a lot of cemeteries, and on the outside, you know, that marble stone, and you know, people, you know, do fancy things there. It looks beautiful. So he said, "That's the way you look. You're like graves, which are not seen, and the men who walk over them are not aware of them." You see. You know, it looks beautiful on the outside. Some places there is no marble or statue, just, you know, a pile of grass and flowers. And people say, "Well, that's a nice place." And they don't realize what's under it. You see? So again, he's talking about the inside and the outside. Both should be beautiful. You see? Verse 45, "Then one of the lawyers," you know, one of them, one of the teachers of the law, "answered and said to him, 'Teacher, by these sayings, you reproach us also.'" Well, this lawyer is wondering, you know, what's happening here? You know, you begin the discourse by telling everybody to listen to us as we teach the law, and then you turn around and you condemn us. And, of course, he did not understand the entirety of the matter either. And he said, "Woe to you also, lawyers," you know, that means teachers of the law, "for you load men with burdens hard to bear." This is what they began to do when the rabbis took, you know, because of the, you know, of what was happening in the community, took the reign of authority, so to speak, the spiritual authority, you know, to teach people the law of God, you see. Others were not doing it. Well, as long as they were doing it only in the law of from the law of Moses, that was fine. But when they began to go beyond that, adding and diminishing, contrary to the law of Moses, the law of God, that's where they, you know, began to heap all kind of burdens. Well, people do it all the time, rules and regulations, to the point where they forget about the main things. And now we're governed by rules and regulations which are not of God, and they become more important in the sign of the side of the administration or the organization or the bureaucracy. And mercy goes by the wayside, and compassion and affection and the real intent of the law of God, the spirit of the law. You see, that's what the problem. You've got to have the totality of it. And to begin with, don't come up with rules and regulations that have nothing to do with the truth of God, the law of God, the purpose of it. That's the reason why the carnal man is an enemy of God. It is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be, because of abuse. You see, we have to understand it. If we were born and raised in a home where there was affection and there was love, there were compassion and mercy and kindness and all those things, and our parents did not, you know, were not overbearing, were not harsh, were not disciplinarians, you know, mankind disciplinarian, you see, not the God kind. No, instead of teaching us the law of God and the nature of it and the love that is in it and the affection and the kindness in it, yes, sometimes you need to be strict, you know, for your own good, you see. And since they haven't done that properly and the society is not doing it and government is not doing it, well, by nature, people hate the law, any law, you see. You drive on the road and, you know, a policeman is right behind you, you don't welcome him with open arms. You transgress the law. You are endangering yourself, your family in the car, and others. Well, the first thing that comes to your mind is resentment. You hate it. You wish he wasn't there. So, we are the ones in that sense that abuse the law of God. But then on the other hand, there are many, because by their harshness and rules and regulations, forgetting kindness, forgetting affection, forgetting mercy, they cause people to hate the law of God. And so when you talk about the law of God, I don't want to hear that. That's not for me. I just want mercy. You see, based on your proclivity, on your, you know, your background, you know, on how much you've been hurt, you see, based on that you develop all kind of feelings. But people, when they really know the law of God, it's a law of mercy, it's a law of the heart, you see, emotions and feelings and kindness and tenderness and affection and warmth. And also because of that, God doesn't want you to get hurt, so he has to give you certain laws, you know, to help you, protect you, defend you from hurt and destruction. But what happens when people, you know, don't like to follow the way of God? Then now all they think about is the rules and regulations that make life difficult and tough for them, you know, just to do whatever they want. They don't care about the fact that they're going to get hurt. So we become warped, demented, perverted in our own minds and hearts, bent out of shape, and so we develop those attitudes against God, against His law. That's why that statement is there to do, you know, to describe this reality that the mind, as Paul would say, you know, in Romans 8:7, is an enemy of God. Because the false God has been taught oftentimes to people, a harsh monster, you know, strict disciplinarian, you know. You do something bad, he's going to get you, you know, he's the boogeyman. That's not the real God, you see. That's a false God that people taught, and so forth. Instead of teaching them the right kind, and because they have not been taught and they've been abused and you know, hurt and oppressed, therefore, God, you see, sees that reality, and He has mercy for people. He realizes why they become that way, and He has mercy on carnal-minded people. And because of oppression, He realizes that, you know, they become haters of the law of God. But He also knows they really don't know God. They don't know the law of God. Had they known it, they would have never developed that attitude. And so they become enemies of God, and they're not subject to the law of God. Don't tell me about that law. I'm sick and tired of it. You know, I've been hurt enough. You see, that's how people think. Don't talk about it. And then you begin to explain to people, what is really the law of God? It's not what you think it is. You see? Then they begin to develop an appreciation and a right kind of attitude toward it. And unfortunately, since many people don't, you see, they become, you know, they just bring the law of God to you as a sort of, you know, code of legalism, you know, do's and don'ts. That's not the law of God. That's a small part of it, you see. The weightier matters of the law are justice and judgment and mercy, you see, and affection and grace and love and kindness, and all the other laws are to that end, to make it possible for you to have all these things in harmony and unity instead of everybody's hurting everybody else. And that's in essence what these teachers were doing by heaping all those burdens. You know, they made people hate the law of God. So when we raise our children, we should learn that too, because many of us are guilty of abusing our children, you know, with all those you know, rules and regulations that are not of God, contrary to the will of God, and we de-emphasize affection and warmth and love and kindness and mercy, you see. So the children grow up hating the law of God. First they hate it in us and what we do to them, and then they, you know, they ascribe it to God too. We give them the image of God, of a false God, by our conduct and behavior. We don't think about it as we should, you see. And then we're going to have, you know, we, you know, end up, you know, with the results, you know. They grow up and they couldn't care less for us, you know. They hardly come to visit us and talk to us. We are the guilty ones. We shouldn't blame the children for that, you see. And of course, they've got the responsibility too. But we have to understand what is happening here. And this is what these leaders of God, you know, leaders of the law, teachers of the law, were doing to the people of God. They were causing the people of God, to hate His law, as He told Eli earlier, you know, in the days of Samuel, when Samuel was being called to serve. He told Eli, you know, you're allowing your sons to cause people to abhor the sacrifices of God because they were abusing the people, you see. And he held Eli responsible for it. So he holds, you know, every father and mother and every man in government, in bureaucracy, in administration responsible for the attitudes of the people because of their misconduct, you see, not their proper kind of a conduct and relationship in accordance with the law of God. That's what he's saying here. So understand it. It's a message to all of us. Woe to you, for you build the tombs of the prophets and your fathers kill them. Of what value is it on one hand to do it and on the other hand to do just the opposite? In fact, you bear witness that you approve the deeds of your fathers. You see? Because when men of God come to them and rebuke them, they hate them. Well, that means you're just the same as those who killed the prophets. They said, you approve of them, you know, they indeed kill them, and you build their tombs. You see, instead of learning that your fathers, with the same attitude that you have, they kill the prophets, you see, for the same reason that you are willing to kill the prophets. Verse 49, therefore the wisdom of God also said, I will send them prophets and apostles. What's the wisdom of God? The law of God, the teachings, you know, the word that was there. I will send them prophets and apostles. And some of them they will kill and persecute, depending on how violent they are, that the blood of all the prophets which was shed from the foundation of the world may be required of this generation. You see? Think about it. Why would this generation be guilty of something that was done 1,000 years ago? They had nothing to do with it. What is he talking about? Because some people in their ignorance, they think that literally this is what he meant. That's what he said. What did he mean by that? Any given generation, if you are disobedient to the law of God and you persecute the prophets of God, you're going to be guilty of it. That generation, in essence, the ones that rejected him and mocked him, you see, they saw him personally there, you see. Well, how about the generation that heard his voice in Mount Sinai and rejected him nevertheless as time went by and became rebellious and God wouldn't let them into the land, you see. In other words, he's talking about people who have that kind of a mind, that kind of an attitude, that kind of a rejection of God, those who abuse the law of God and oppress others with it, they're going to be guilty of the shedding of innocent blood in any given generation. You see? And now that, you know, everybody else is not guilty even though they have done it, but only this generation is going to bear the penalty for it. You know, that's contrary to the law of God. And so, when you read it, understand the entirety of the subject, and then you'll begin to understand what you're reading. You know, these are matters that are spiritually discerned. And we're going to stop at this point, continue next time. This is again Mordecai Joseph, greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.